Hey friends, welcome to another episode of Voices of Hope. On the podcast this week, we have Barb Schenck. And Barb's going to talk to us about grief and loss. She went through a lot of pain, loss, grief in her life, losing her husband and sons within 2 years. And she's going to talk to us about what was helpful during that time, what was not helpful, and also how to seek out help when you are going through a time in your life when it feels like you have no more hope. And I thought this would be great for us to all hear to talk about as some of us may be going through this period of life currently. So I hope you enjoy the conversation. Hopefully this goes well then. Hi Barb, how you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you.
Barb, thanks for joining us today. And so I want to talk a little bit about your life. I've heard a little bit about it at Theology on Tap, and I think you have some very good and insightful things to tell people about grief and going through grief. But first, how did you end up at New Hope? Tell us about that story.
Okay. Well, I moved from Troy, Ohio, and I belong to the First Presbyterian Church in Troy. And I've always been a Presbyterian, so that's part of the reason I ended up at New Hope. Mm-hmm. And I really love Presbyterians. And one of the reasons is they're non-judgmental, in my opinion. And then some things that my pastors have said over the years, and one of them is, we don't have all the answers. And I believe that. We don't have all the answers. And so there's lots of reasons for New Hope. It's close to where I live. I live in Castle Pines. Mm-hmm. And I like it here. It's a big church, a lot bigger than what I came from. But there's a lot of small groups you can get involved in if you need that. And I like it here.
Well, good. Yeah, and because Troy, Ohio, that's bigger, right? That's not a small town, is it?
Well, it's smaller than Castle Rock.
Oh,
it's
really?
About, I think when I left it was about 25,000. Now okay. I think it's up to 30,000. And so Castle Rock's maybe, what, twice that?
Yeah, Castle Rock, I think the last time we checked is 60,000.
Yeah, that's
but
what
it's,
I thought.
But they were expecting within 5 years doubling that size. To 120.
I keep hearing that, and I think maybe I better move.
I know, every time I go out to the grocery store, I'm like, where are all these people coming from?
Uh-huh.
Because I moved here in 2015, and even since then, that's 3 years now, it feels like there's just more people, more traffic in general.
Uh-huh. A lot of traffic.
Yeah.
I'm a small town person. I'm originally from Mason, Ohio. It's north of Cincinnati. Very small town. And that's that's what I like.
Now, I want to clear something up. I never know what to say. I come from Iowa, and we consider ourselves Midwest. But Ohio and Michigan still consider themselves Midwest. But they're... is it Midwest?
I'm laughing because I think that's crazy. Yes, we're Midwest, but I don't know why.
Yeah, because you're further east.
Right, you're right.
You're almost, you're the east, almost the east coast. You're on Eastern Standard Time.
I know.
Yeah.
But we're considered Midwest.
Huh. Mm-hmm. I've always wondered why that is.
Me too.
Because I would even consider Colorado Midwest before, Ohio. Iowa, but.
Uh-huh.
So are you a big Buckeyes fan, or are you just...
I'm not much into sports. Not much into sports.
Well, good. So tell us a little bit about your story, because you went through a period of loss, extreme loss, within a couple of years, right?
Right.
And tell us that story, and then we're going to talk about kind of what was helpful during that grieving process, and what were the things that weren't helpful to you?
Correct.
When you were grieving the loss of your family?
Well, I think what I would like to do is read my story.
Sure.
My church in Troy did a book on faith journeys.
Hmm.
And it was just done in 2012. And I forget how my minister worded it. Back then we called them ministers. But he feels like when you can look into other people's lives and their stories, it's helpful. Mm-hmm. So it made me decide to write my story. Yeah. So here's the book.
Well, Barb, that's great, because that's exactly what I want the podcast thing to be, is for people to hear stories of faith from other people. Uh-huh. And okay. that's really cool. Your okay. church did that.
Yeah, so. I really like this.
Yeah.
So that was 2012. Okay. My faith journey started when I was a baby. I was baptized Roman Catholic, but raised in the Presbyterian Church. When I was in grade school and high school, I loved Sunday school and PYC. My journey has been fraught with tragedy. The first tragedy was my divorce when I was in my 20s. My faith became even more important to me. It was a marriage of 4 years with no children. The second tragedy was the sudden death of my husband at age 43. I felt like half of a person with 3 children to raise on my own. My religious beliefs didn't seem to change all that much. But with the third tragedy, my religion/faith took quite a beating. 2 years after my spouse died, my 2 sons died in an automobile accident. They were 2 wonderful boys, ages 16 and 13. I am left with a lovely daughter for which I am always grateful. At the time, and even now, I hear many cliches that upset me, and I do not believe them to be true. Everything happens for a reason. It was meant to be. It was God's will. It was their time to go. God needed 2 angels. This will make you stronger, and on and on. After such a horrific tragedy, it seems my strength came from God's love, my minister, the congregation, the love of my friends and relatives, and last but not least, my physician and my daughter. I remember praying for strength and to be happy again. I do believe there is a part of my heart that will always feel broken. Barb Shank.
Hmm.
That was helpful to me to write this.
Yeah.
Much years later, because the accident was 1984, and this was written in 2012.
Isn't that? I always find that interesting. That as humans, when we speak something, tell the story of something, or write it down, or speak it, that it helps us heal in some way.
It does. Journaling and talking, it mm-hmm. really helps a lot.
Yeah.
So if you're going to ask me what helps, I wrote a whole list.
Barb and her lists.
I know. Is that what you're going to ask me next?
No, so, so you went through within, was it 5 years?
2 years.
Year, 2 years that your husband passed mm-hmm. unexpectedly, and your 2 sons passed away in a car accident?
Yes.
And you witnessed that car accident?
Yes.
Correct? Yeah.
Well, we were in 2 cars. Mm-hmm. We actually came up on the accident, like, within minutes.
Yeah.
So, yes, I actually climbed in their car.
Hmm.
And unfortunately, my daughter was... Well, fortunately, she was in the other car with us, mm-hmm. but she saw all that, and she was only 10.
Yeah. A lot of trauma.
Yeah, a lot of trauma.
Yeah.
She was with her dad when he passed out and they worked on him.
Mm.
They were at a grade school basketball game. So she was 8 and she saw the nurse work on her dad. And then she was 10 when she witnessed the accident.
Hmm.
So she's been through a lot.
Yeah. And so have you.
Yes.
Yeah. And then you have to, in some ways, try to hold that all together for your daughter afterwards. And,
yes.
Those are those stories you hear, and it just seems like unspeakable pain that you went through.
Yes. Fortunately, you go through shock.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good.
Yeah. It numbs you for a while.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I remember being, after the accident, I remember being at a stop sign in someone else's car. And it was like a month. And I said, oh my gosh, I don't have a car. So that's how much shock I was in. I didn't mm-hmm. even realize I didn't have a car. So that's your body tries to protect you.
Yeah. Your body knows what to do in those moments. Mm-hmm. And so going through this process of 2 years, losing a husband, losing two kids, and you've mentioned it in your story there from your church booklet. But during those times at the funerals, visitations, times after, people say things, thinking they're helping. And to be fair to other people too, is when you talk to somebody in that situation, you don't always know what to say. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you say things, not necessarily for that person, but it's to make you feel better about seeing this tragedy happen. Like, everything happens for a reason, because they're trying to make sense out of it, right? And right. So, but that's not helpful to you going through that. You made a list. What are some things that weren't helpful for you going through that?
Were not or were?
Were not.
Okay.
We'll start with that, and then we'll end on the positive that were.
Were not. The thing that resonates the most is it was God's will. I like to believe in a loving God. A lot of people, when they go through a tragedy, they're angry at God. They blame God. Mm-hmm. I did not do that. I don't believe that God plans how, when, and where you're going to die. Because if he did, that would be a cruel God to take my sons away. And, of course, my husband, too. So I think, like you said, people were trying to be helpful by what they say, but probably they shouldn't say anything.
Kind of like the tradition in the Jewish tradition, sitting Shiva, where you sit with the people who've lost a loved one in silence, and I think that's a good point to make, that sometimes you don't need to say anything.
I think you're absolutely right. I think a hug is nice, mm-hmm. But the things that, and like you said, they mean well, mm-hmm. but I'll never get over this. My mother died at age 63. She was mentally and physically ill. And life was a struggle. So it was a blessing because life was such a struggle. And it was hard on the family. And my father-in-law at the funeral home said to me, well, I guess this solves some of your problems.
Oh.
Can you believe that? I mean, he meant well. He's a wonderful man.
Yeah, yeah.
He meant well, but that's not what you say.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's cringeworthy.
Yes, it is. So so you tend to remember the things people shouldn't have said.
Yes.
Than things that they said that were helpful. Mm-hmm. I do have a list of what's helpful, but I think I like that Jewish thing. You just sit in silence.
Yeah, sitting Shiva.
I did not know
that. They do that for, I don't know if they do it totally in silence, but it's a, maybe that's what it was back in the day. Today, I don't know if that's what happens, but it goes on for 7 days, I think, after somebody passes. And if somebody is listening to this podcast and says, Jordan has no idea what he's talking about, fair enough. But it's for a long period of time after somebody dies that the family gets together and they sit together and people come and visit them. But I think in its origins, it was that you sit and you just be with the people who just lost a loved one.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, because, during those times, there isn't going to be really words that do anything for you, right?
No.
And so just the presence of somebody being there is far more beneficial than words.
And if you want to talk, they listen. That's mm-hmm. listening.
Yep.
You're right. Yeah. You're right about that. So should we talk of things that helped?
Yeah, do you have any more things that didn't help?
Gosh, it's been 34 years. probably the main thing were the cliches that that didn't help.
Yeah, that you read in there, like God wanted them more than you. And
the priest said that. You know, the children were raised Catholic. My husband was Catholic. I've always been Presbyterian. And the priest said God needed two angels.
Yeah.
So that, you know, I don't know.
As a pastor, I think that's wrong on a different comforting somebody in grief level, and also on just a theological level. But anyway, it's just,
I know what you're saying. So I still remember that.
Yeah. So what are the things that helped you in this?
Well, we're going to laugh at this.
All right.
I prayed that I would be normal. I felt so devastated, and I prayed that someday I would be normal. Now, that kind of makes me laugh, because I don't know if I am or not. Okay. So, of course, prayer and talking with your pastor. Counseling. I'm not sure I had enough. I'm not sure my daughter had enough. But if you're not relating to your therapist or counselor, get a different one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very much like a dating process.
Yes.
Because you have to find the one that fits well with you. Just like pastors, just like any CEOs, therapists, there's good therapists, there's bad therapists, there's good pastors, bad pastors, good CEOs, bad CEOs. And so you have to kind of work your way through and find someone that works well for you, right?
Do you have time to hear about one of the therapists?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Young fella, very young. He said to me, "You are a good example of why parents shouldn't have their lives revolve around their children."
Mm.
Wow. I didn't go back to him.
Yeah.
Can you believe it?
I mean, it's... I do have a little sympathy for therapists, because my wife is one, but sometimes I think they slip into those tropes also when people are suffering and say things.
They wish they hadn't said.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I only saw him once.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Fair enough, okay. Now, the accident was July the 4th, 1984. Mm. My primary care, PCP doctor, called me right away. And he put me on Valium for a couple days. I don't remember how many days. I'm thinking it was two.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in July the 4th. Then that following November, I just felt so depressed. I mean, you know, all those months, I just felt so depressed.
And the holidays are coming around?
Yeah. Yep. So I made an appointment with my primary care, and he put me on Tofenol, which is an antidepressant.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think when you're, it was kind of goes along with that last question we'll talk about that later. We'll talk about medication later.
Okay.
Okay. So definitely journaling. Now, something else that I did, and I have heard that other people have done this, move in with a friend or a relative for a month or two. My daughter and I could not stay in that house alone.
Mm. Yeah.
And so we did that. We moved in with a friend for a couple months. So I think that's good advice. Support groups. Now, I think they're great. When I lost the boys, I didn't know anybody that had lost a child. I desperately needed to talk to someone that has survived the loss of a child.
Yeah, because nobody else understands what you're going through besides people who have gone through.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And I believe I told Pastor Russ this. I wasn't sure I was going to make it. That's how I felt. I didn't know if I could make it. And I needed to talk to someone that had survived it. They made it. Didn't know anybody. So I told Pastor Russ, I said, if there's somebody that wants to talk to me as a survivor, I would be willing to do that one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, Jordan, everything you do helps a little bit. Not a lot, just a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you put all those little bits together and you have some strength.
Mm-hmm.
So support groups help. Now in Troy, Ohio, they now have what they call compassionate friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they've just lost children. And they've invited me back when I lived there a few times just to be part of the group.
Yeah.
and talk.
Hmm.
So workshops help. I did a weekend workshop. It was a Catholic one in Dayton, Ohio. And it was two nights. And it was a little small groups. And you could be going through a divorce or just any kind of grief.
Mm-hmm. And that... So you were seeking things out
mm-hmm.
to help,
yes,
right?
Yes.
But I'm sure there was a period of time where you just felt like you couldn't do anything because you were so paralyzed by the grief.
Absolutely,
and pain, right?
Absolutely. My minister, he's retired now. He was very worried about me because I got the word out. I don't want visitors. If you want, send me a card with a note.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to communicate, and he was very concerned about that. But, of course, close family, of course, but
yeah.
All the church people, they wanted to help me.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to talk to them.
Yeah, you didn't want, or you were not ready for help.
I wasn't ready. That's a good way to put it. I wasn't ready.
But then when you were ready, you started seeking
out
these things.
I did all these things, yeah.
Yeah.
So then I set up scholarships at the high school mm-hmm. in memory of the boys. There were a couple of trees planted in their memory. I talked to the boys' friends, and that was helpful. And I helped others. And that's helpful. I told mm-hmm. you about the compassionate friends. And the cards and the letters and the gifts. And I've got written down here, talking. I think this is kind of interesting, Jordan. The accident was on a Wednesday, July the 4th. That following Sunday, my minister did When Bad Things Happen to Good People.
Mm.
And I kind of wanted to read this to you. The congregation had so many questions after that sermon.
Yeah.
And back then we did tapes. We didn't do CDs.
Right. Yep.
So I had the tapes put on CDs. So the first one he did, When Bad Things Happen to Good People. So a lot of questions. So the next Sunday... What can we do when bad things happen to good people?
Mm.
So the next Sunday, isn't this is kind of funny. What good does prayer do?
Mm.
This is heavy stuff.
Yeah, heavy stuff.
Heavy stuff. The next Sunday, how am I to pray?
Mm.
The next Sunday, 5 Sundays in a row because of the accident.
Yeah.
When doubts creep in.
Mm.
So I've got those CDs.
You know what that kind of shows me, those 5 weeks there, is that your pastor and your church were somehow going through the grieving process with you.
Absolutely.
Of wondering why this happened.
Absolutely. And what I would like to say to that is I can't imagine going through devastation without a church family.
Hmm.
I just can't imagine. And people do it, but what a support system that is.
Yeah.
To have a church mm-hmm. that cares.
Yeah.
And did everything they could. And so I'm thinking... I believe one of your questions was,
Are you ever done grieving?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I gave that a lot of thought. And yes, I'm done grieving. I didn't cry when I read this story to you. But in my opinion, you never get over the death of a child. That's my opinion. But I don't grieve. I like to talk about them. Now, there are things that trigger, and then I feel sad and tears, you know. Yeah. But I still feel the need to talk about them, and it's been 34 years. Hmm. So I have wonderful friends that will listen, which is good.
Yeah.
They'll still listen.
Yeah, you need that.
You need that.
Mm-hmm. Like we were saying earlier, to talk about it, to write it down helps no matter where you are in life to heal a little bit, you know.
So are you ever done grieving? I did mention this at your Theology on Tap. Is I feel like an older couple that have been married 50, 60 years and they lose their spouse, I don't think they do get over grieving. Mm-hmm. Because they've lost half of a, they feel like half of a person.
Yeah.
And they're old and they think, okay, I don't want to start a new life, you know, at my age. I was so young when I lost my husband. I was 42. Mm-hmm. So I did build a new life. Mm-hmm. And but when you're elderly, I don't think you do get over the grief process, is my opinion.
Yeah. Because your whole life has been with that person.
Right.
And when that person is gone, then it,
absolutely. And it changes your life. They're gone and your life is totally changed.
Yep.
And so, and then the death of a child. I don't think, it's different for everybody, I'm sure. I don't think I grieve anymore. But there are trigger points that make me sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody has that to some extent. I think, you know, there's things that happen in your life that certain things will trigger that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're learning more and more about the brain and how it keeps those memories and the smells and everything of the time. You know, people will smell something and that will trigger because they smelled that in...
Or music. Music can do it.
Yeah.
There was a song that came on, and it was my husband's favorite. And I just bawled like a baby, you know? Mm-hmm. So music can do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have a uncle who, he's a police officer in the Missouri area and got called into, what was that town years ago that got just decimated by a tornado.
Years ago?
Yeah. Like...
In what state?
7, 8 years ago.
Oh.
Not Mississippi. Missouri.
Missouri.
I just had it. It starts with a J.
I don't know.
Anyway, he has said that the smell of mothballs will trigger.
Oh.
Because when they were finding people... and their bodies, and they put them in the body bags with, you know, mothballs. And so...
Wow.
That type of thing. Yeah, trauma never leaves you.
You know, TPSD, you'd never really get over that, do you?
I'm not the right person to ask.
But I bet your wife would know.
Yeah, she would definitely know. I don't think it ever necessarily leaves, but there's ways to be able to cope with it and learn how to live with it and deal with it. I think there's new things they're doing in therapy, like EMDR, it's called, where it's more complicated than I'm going to make it sound, but it's basically a way to help rewire your brain in certain ways, because whenever you go through trauma or certain things, it wires your brain in a new way that it associates this with that. And EMDR, I think, is trying to reconnect different brain circuits that doesn't happen as much or at all. But trauma, I think trauma stays with you.
I think so too. I think of my daughter and what she went through at such a young age, and I feel like that's still with her,
mm-hmm.
and probably always will be.
Yeah.
Well, what else do you have there?
So the last question was, what would you say to someone who feels like there is no more hope, that they're so deep in the grieving process that they can't see any light?
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to somebody who's in that place right now?
Well, I'm glad you let me know you were going to ask that, because that is a heavy, heavy question. And I gave it a lot of thought.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should call their primary care physician.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to them. And this is what I did. I was a school librarian at the time, and I was having trouble functioning. I was so depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, it was in July, and I saw him again in November. And he put me on Tofenil, which is an antidepressant. And he was thinking after a year I needed to be off that. Well, I was on it a little bit longer because of the holidays. Christmas was coming up. So I think I was on it for 14 months. And I was able to function. You still grieve,
mm-hmm.
But you're not in that deep depression. So if your primary care says, you should see a therapist, or I'd like to put you on medication, I think that's what you should do. I really do.
Mm.
Because when you read that, when you asked me that question, I thought, wow. And some people are stuck.
Yeah.
And they need some help.
Yeah.
Professional help.
Yep.
By a therapist like your wife.
Yep.
Or a doctor,
mm-hmm.
just a regular primary care. Tofenil really worked for me.
Yeah.
And
then I think before you said church community.
Oh, absolutely.
A community of some sort that helps you walk through the grieving process.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That your church is, you know, they can't do enough for you, which is, I love Presbyterians. So,
yeah.
I don't know what I would have done without friends and family in my church.
Yeah.
Now, God took a beating. I wasn't angry at him. I didn't blame him. But it changed the way I think.
Hmm.
I don't know if I should say this part, but you can always delete
you can
it if
it
you want
if you
to,
want.
But I don't know if prayer really works.
Hmm.
Now, for people that pray and pray and pray and they have this great outcome,
yeah,
it worked for them.
Yeah,
I didn't have that great outcome.
Yeah, well, when we think of prayer kind of in a way, almost like a genie in a bottle, I think that causes a lot of problems, that if we pray for something hard enough, then God will grant it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause we don't always know what God's up to.
Mm-hmm.
We don't always know what's going to be best for us. We don't know what we have to go through in order to become the person God wants us to be. And I have this little plaque in our apartment that says prayer is more about changing ourselves than the world.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first got that plaque years ago when I started seminary, in my mind, the way my mind worked at that time with faith and everything, I was like, this seems kind of heretical. Like, no, we're supposed to pray to God to change the world and change these things. But the more experience I've gotten in ministry, more knowledge I have of spirituality in the Bible, that becomes more and more true every day, I think. That it's a way to help us become more open and loving people. Not so much about the things happening to us in our lives, but praying, talking with God, to connect with God during those times when we don't understand. And that helps change us rather than
mm-hmm.
things around us. Does that kind of make sense?
Oh, absolutely. That makes sense. Should I read this?
This thing right
yeah,
here?
Should yeah. Should I read that?
Yeah, we can. We'll do it at the end.
Okay.
I think I have one more question for
okay,
you.
Okay, sure.
After getting into spirituality stuff. And
okay.
So you said it's changed you in certain ways, spiritually wise, and your relationship with God. What else? The prayer doesn't feel like it necessarily really works anymore. Is there any other part of spiritual walk, your faith, that has kind of shifted?
Well, I'll talk about prayer again. When I was a little girl, you know, I was always praying that the war would be over, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it was always, thank you for this, thank you for that. And now it's just a little harder for me
mm-hmm.
to know how to pray. Let's see, what other way would it have changed me? I have to think about that.
Okay.
Nothing comes to mind right now.
Yeah, that's fine.
Well,
I know you shared some stuff at Theology on Tap. I'm trying to remember back.
Oh, one thing I said at Theology. I remember saying this. Probably shouldn't have said it. I believe in God. I'm just not sure what he does.
Yes, that's what it was. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's not a good thing to feel that way, is it?
No, I mean, that's a, I guess it's part of the Presbyterian way, but just being authentic. And I think saying those things helps you find your way with God. And
mm-hmm.
I think we all have those doubts and have those feelings of like, is God really doing anything at all?
Mm-hmm.
I know I have those doubts.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a perfectly okay thing to say.
Oh, well, good.
Because when we speak that stuff, it helps us discover more things and dig deeper rather than just feeling like that's something we're not supposed to say and we hide it.
Uh-huh.
And then that just sits with us forever and it grows, right?
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I feel better now because I kind of regretted saying that. And you made me feel better.
Yeah, so. No, that's it's perfectly okay thing to say. And I think anybody that has gone through what you've gone through, loss of a child, they've all have definitely thought that.
Mm-hmm. Loss of two children.
Loss of two children, yeah.
Wonderful boys.
Yeah.
Wonderful boys. Such potential.
Yeah. So they, 16, or 34 years ago, one was 16, right?
He was the driver, and one was 13.
So he'd be, was that 52?
He'd be 50, I believe.
Yeah. And then the other son was how old?
13.
13.
Yeah, he'd be 47.
Okay.
Yeah. So if I'm angry at anybody, it would be General Motors.
Mm.
They took the demolished car to see if there was anything wrong with the brake lines. It was in the country on the 4th of July, and the passenger that survived the wreck, survivor, he said Mike was pumping the brakes and didn't have any brakes.
Mm.
So they didn't find anything wrong with the brake lines. So about a little less than a year, my father-in-law sent me a magazine. I think it's called Home Mechanics.
Yeah.
And it listed my car. My car was a year old. Celebrity, General Motors, listed my car as losing power. Power brakes, power steering. And I was not, I should have sued him. But I just wasn't strong enough to do that.
Yeah.
And so I will be honest with you, when I hear on the news these different car companies that have recalls,
yeah,
I feel sick to my stomach
mm-hmm.
because my car was not recalled.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit of a puzzle. Is that really what happened?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And sometimes you can drive yourself crazy just thinking mm-hmm. about those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You brought something today that you have framed, and it's a little prayer or a poem.
I don't know what you would call it.
It's something like that.
I think it kind of sounds like a prayer. Yeah. A little bit.
Or just a saying. But this was the only thing that made sense to you during your time of grief.
Correct.
Yeah. So you want to read it?
Sure. I'll tell you the history behind this.
Yeah.
My friend lost her son in a motorcycle accident years ago, and it was after the death of my boys, and I don't remember the time frame. But when you go to the funeral home, you get these little cards, those small cards, information of the deceased and so forth. So on that card was a prayer, and I really liked it. So I bought a couple of frames, one for me and one for my friend, and I took that little card to a calligrapher. And so I keep this framed in my bedroom, and it makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
God hath not promised skies always blue, flower-strewn pathways all our lives through. God hath not promised sun without rain, joy without sorrow, peace without pain. But God hath promised strength for the day, rest for the labor, light for the way, grace for the trials, help from above, unfailing sympathy, undying love. I just think that's beautiful.
It is beautiful. Yeah.
So that made sense to me, and calligrapher, look, the calligrapher did a great job.
Well, with that, I think that's a perfect way to kind of end our conversation here. And if anybody at New Hope hears this and wants to seek you out and talk with you, is that something you're willing to do?
Absolutely. I am willing to do that because that's what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know anybody. I wasn't sure I was going to survive.
Yeah.
It's not a good feeling.
Nope. Not at all. Well, if you can be someone to help somebody else through that, that would be your goal, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, Barb, thanks for joining us today. And you feel good about everything?
I think so.
Okay. Good.
I appreciate this opportunity.
Yeah. Well, maybe sometime you'll have to join us again.
Oh, okay. Down the road.
Huh? Down the road.
When I'm even more experienced.
All right. Well, thanks, Barb.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.